Hey, how you doing? I'm Steve Folland. Welcome to another one. This episode of Being Freelance is supported by Riverside. In fact, not just supported by, it was recorded using Riverside, because that's how you can record high-quality audio video remotely. But what I love is that when you hit stop, Riverside is just getting started. It transcribes the recording before I've even finished making my cup of tea. It creates video edits, including highlights, videos for social. It goes, oh yes, this would be a good clip. How about this? And you go, yes, please. You just tweak them in your own branding, get it in the format you need, add captions if you want, all within Riverside itself. It is such a time saver. And if you're live streaming, perhaps to YouTube or LinkedIn, whilst recording in high quality and making use of those social clips I mentioned, it is a repurposing dream. Clearly, it's perfect for podcasters, live streamers, but you could also use it for other things in your business, like recording video testimonials. Why not take a look at beingfreelance.com/Riverside and see how it could work for you? It's free to get started, but for paid plans, do yourself a favor, use the code BEINGFREELANCE, or one word, and that will save you 15%, and thank you to Riverside for supporting this episode. But right now, let's find out what it's like being freelance for editor and SEO copywriter Mary Cameron.
I discovered that ageism probably was a thing. That was one part of it. I stopped winning contracts. And the second part of it was that when I walked into interviews in my best black frock and my heels and looked at the panel, my gut said, run! This is so not what we ought to be doing anymore. I'm good at client relations. You know, I have good soft skills. I'm good at managing clients. That's the basis of being successful in business, I think. Mondays I don't work. I have a run. I do my shopping. I hang out with my neighbours. So Mondays, no, I don't work. And quite often Fridays now. But this is very recent. This is only in the last few months for me that I've instituted these kind of things. I think I'm starting to get a grip on this thing, you know, finally. Take me 10 years, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, so there is Mary, who goes by the rather brilliant name of The Wrinkly Writer. I love it. I love Mary. Her conversation coming up in a moment. It's been another fun week in the Being Freelance community with lots of new members joining. Hello to you. You could be one too. Go to beingfreelance.com, click on community. We did Mario Kart this week, which was good fun. Mario Kart Grand Prix at lunchtime. We've done two sessions of co-working. A couple of BFFs, Being Freelance Friends, have hosted Tea Break Socials. That's where you, I'm not involved, get to host a little tea break chat with other members from the community, get to know them. And next week, we're off to London to Adobe Max, and extra excited because previous guest James Barnard is actually flying over from Australia, so we'll be back in the UK, so we're going to be meeting him there as well. So if you are at Adobe Max, I realize that's in a matter of days from when this episode goes out, I will be there. Please come find me, say hi. Doubtless I'll be wearing a bright pink sweatshirt, although it is Adobe Max, full of creative, so it's probably full of people wearing brightly coloured sweatshirts. In fact, if you want to stand out, probably wear black. So yeah, that is coming up. Also next week, we've got a social in Manchester, up north in the UK. We've got loads of stuff coming up. Book club, you've still got time to join us. We're reading Do Penguins Eat Peaches? It's all about market research. I'm really enjoying it. I don't want to say too much about it because that's the whole point of book club. But yes, if you fancy joining us, details in the community. All right, shush, Folland. Crack on. We want to hear from Mary. We want to find out how she got to be called The Wrinkly Writer. So let's head off to France. Say salut, bonjour, hello to freelance editor and SEO copywriter Mary Cameron. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Steve. Lovely to see you.
How about we get started hearing how you got started being freelance?
Well, when I turned 58 in Australia, living in Western Australia, my hair was grey. And I stopped winning managerial contracts, you know, in communications organizations or in the public service that I could have done, you know, with my head, my gray head in a paper bag. So I think I discovered that probably ageism probably was a thing. That was one part of it. I stopped winning contracts. And the second part of it was that when I walked into interviews in my best black frock and my heels and looked at the panel, I thought, My gut said, run. You know, this is so not what we ought to be doing anymore. And I think the panel probably picked that up because part of the reason I didn't win those jobs. And then a lovely young woman who'd been on one of my teams that I'd managed said, you know what, you'd be a really good copywriter. And I thought, what even is that? I have no idea what that is. But, you know, I've written things all my life. You know, I've taught business writing. I'd run communications organizations. So, you know, I'd been a writer and been a copywriter long before I even knew what it was. So I decided to give it a go. Et voilà.
Just like that. But so hang on. So you were 58, but you said you were going for contracts. So had you been working like for one organization for a long time? What was your role if it wasn't copywriting?
Not really, because the era I gave up a permanent job, which people thought I was bonkers, in the vet sector, like the vocational education sector, as a lecturer and a trainer, because my husband's a surfer and he wanted to move to the country near the beach. So I thought, well, I'll just work in the little towns nearby and see what I can find. And so I'd been managing a training organization there as their training manager for years. Then I got seconded by the West Australian government to go into the remote outback to work on programs with disadvantaged kids. So I've always reinvented myself and done different things, really, because otherwise I get bored.
So you would often be applying for short-term
roles? That's it. Normally 3-year contracts, usually, or a year or 3-year contracts. And then they just kind of dried up, really.
And you felt a large part of that was to do with your age?
I think so, because I was still me, you know, I still had a bunch of really good skills, but also I think it was to do with my gut, you know, saying, really, Mary, you know, it's time to do something different here. You know, this game is getting a little old. And I think I must have, you know, my antennae must have been, you know, vibing that message out really when I went for those jobs. So I just decided to give this copywriting freelancing, even though I didn't even really know what it was. See if I could just give it a go.
And that's the thing. So you didn't know what it was. So how on earth did you get started, you know, like doing it and also getting paid for it?
Well, in one of my former lives, I'd managed big teams developing digital learning programs. So I had a good grasp of, you know, how to put a website together and all of that. So I drew up a brief for a website for 4 words copywriting. Okay, 4 words copywriting. Tagline, fewer words, more meaning. And I sent that brief out to several agencies, and one of the agency bosses came right back to me and said, fewer words, more meaning. You sound like my kind of copywriter. Would you like to pitch for this website project that I've got on my hands at the moment? And the boss of the company is not happy with who we've assigned. We need someone. Would you give it a go? So I just pitched for this job, huge, huge, huge website job. I was still working a day job to the end of a contract at that time, won this copywriting job, worked every waking hour between, you know, 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. in the morning to do it, and it turned out good. So I just jumped in the deep end, really, and that job went well. That agency gave me more work. I worked for that same client who I did the first job for years until I moved to France. And then word of mouth, really. I just morphed into something that I didn't even know what it was, really.
But so you sent out a brief for your own website,
yeah,
and off the back of your own brief got your first freelance client.
That's it, yeah.
Amazing. I love that so much. But so then it was word of mouth from that chunky project.
Yeah, absolutely. And still is, in fact, you know, I don't have an enormous volume of clients. I have maybe 6 or 8 people that I do everything for and have done for most of them for years. You know, I don't often pitch for new work unless something looks interesting. I did pitch for something recently that was on the job board in a group I belong to and got that contract. That was quite interesting because I haven't had to establish that level of rapport and trust with someone who knew me not at all, you know, from zero for quite a long time. So it's worked out well, but it was quite a different experience from how I normally start with clients who come to me knowing something about me or knowing someone who I work for. Yeah. Mm.
Okay, let's put this in perspective. So what year were you getting that first freelance client?
It's now, what is it, 1920? Well, I'm really old, not that old. At least 10 years ago now. I probably just passed my 10-year anniversary as from the launch of my first brand, which was Four Words Copywriting. So nearly 11 years I've been doing this gig now.
And you mentioned moving to France. And when did you relocate to France?
7 years ago, in permanently. I've always come and gone from France. But we came here permanently in 2017. And most of my clients came with me. They don't mind. I'm like this little copy elf that works away in the night when they're sleeping and they wake up in the morning and there's fresh copy, to have with their coffee.
I was going to say, so they are mainly still back in Australia?
Mainly, yeah. I have the odd UK client, very odd in a good way. I'm doing a bit of transcreation now that my French is pretty good. So I do some, not really translating, but transcreation of case studies. And I've written a couple of websites in French for people. So I'm starting to get some local work. But mostly my clients are still based in Australia, yeah.
So you mentioned that your first brand was Four Words.
Yeah.
You decided you'd go with a company name to begin with.
That's it, yeah.
That's obviously not what you are today.
So wrinkly writer.
At what point did you leave Four Words behind?
I'd been Four Words and tonking along okay with Four Words for quite a while. And then the inimitable Kate Toon, who's I belong to her Clever Copywriting School group, she was running a copywriting mastermind. And that was, oh, God, maybe 3 years ago now, 3-4 years ago now. And I signed up to do that. And when we were doing a session on branding in that training, Kate said to me, I've got something for you. You're either going to be deeply offended or you're going to love it. And she said, I think you should rebrand as the Wrinkly Writer. And I loved it. It was perfect. It was just absolutely who I am. Quirky, not born yesterday. Yeah. Loads of experience. So it was just so right. And so I did a rebrand as the Wrinkly Writer. And it's working quite well.
So instead of like being deterred by ageism, it's your strength.
It absolutely is. Yeah, it completely. And I really I work, I don't have a niche. I tried to niche once and I got in the sort of allied health area. And after 6 months, I thought if I write another blog about the piriformis syndrome or physio stuff, I'm going to go insane. I'm a general jobbing copywriter. I don't have a niche, but I do quite often write for older people who are starting new businesses. That was one of the reasons I pitched for this recent job. That was for, a guy in his 60s who is launching a new consultancy. I often, not always, but, my clients are all ages, but, I do quite often work for people who are like me, who are reinventing themselves at an advanced age, vintage.
So you were in Kate Toon's Clever Copywriting School. So if you started copywriting, not knowing what copywriting was, at what point did you decide to, learn it, if that's the right word?
Learn it. Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. And that's one of the challenges for me still is to carve out enough time for my own professional development. I mean, I'd sort of done copywriting for years, really, long before the internet was even a thing, I realize. I taught communication skills and marketing writing skills in the vocational education sector in Western Australia, in Australia for yonks. I'd managed these big digital production teams. Lots of things in my career had dovetailed into copywriting and given me those sorts of skills. I grew up in the era of plain English. I taught plain English writing. So, those rules of plain English, write actively, write short sentences, know who you're doing the writing for and what you want them to do with it. That was totally ingrained in all of the training and teaching I'd done of other people. So, without knowing it, I had a pretty good grounding in copywriting skills. But things like SEO copywriting, I learnt, thanks to people like Kate. I did her course, the SEO recipe course. Yeah, so I took the things I suppose I'd learned in 40 years of writing and teaching, everything imaginable, in various careers. And then when I joined Kate's group, there was brilliant training. She's a fantastically skilled, enormously generous human who provided some of the best training in copywriting that anyone could ever get, really. Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, sometimes how we have more skills than we think from, you know, that have layered up over the years. Did that include business skills, though? Did you know what you were doing from that perspective?
As a bookkeeper and a small business person, I'm a half decent copywriter, frankly. I still struggle with those things. One of the things that make me savvy in business, I think, is that I'm good at client relations. You know, I have good soft skills. I really do. I'm good at managing clients. So that's the basis of being successful in business, I think. You know, you need to be able to manage the finances, all those other things. I've still got a lot to learn on that score, probably. But in terms of the human aspect of being good at business, I think I'm quite good at that. Yeah.
Yeah, because you said that you have a lot of long-term clients.
Yeah.
As in, so what do you think makes a good relationship or managing that, as you say?
Yeah, I think it's here's a brag. Okay. Last year, I think I won the editing award in the Clever Copywriting School. And one of my clients said, you should put in for this. And I thought, nah, you know, there's people in this group who are really highly trained, skilled editors who've been doing it for a million years and have degrees in it, you know. But I chucked something in anyway and I won. And the reason that the judges gave was for my probably a bit for my word wrangling skills, but mainly for my very human way of managing people. I'm really good at, I don't know, my latest clients would, yeah, he would say it now. I'm really good at making people feel confident and okay about their words and their writing as an editor. You know, I'm really good at explaining how we could do something better or differently without them feeling like I'm, you know, putting nails in the hands of their word babies. You know, I think I'm generous with my time. I mean, I think that's something that counts quite a lot. You know, I spend a lot of time. I'm a copywriter, not a cab driver. You know, I don't turn the meter on the minute I start engaging with someone. You know, I don't charge for them to talk to me or send me emails, you know, because if you don't bill people for that sort of conversation time, they'll relax and they'll tell you things that will help you write really well for them that they may not tell you if they're tense because they think the meter's ticking in the background, you know. So I think, you know, being generous, being clear, I mean, I'm quite direct. I mean, the client that I've been working for recently, who I pitched for the job, when he sends me something to review, he says, I'm off to pour myself a stiff whiskey while I wait for your usual frank and fearless feedback. So, you know, I'm very clear, but I'm very human, and I'm generous with my time. I think those things make a difference, yeah.
Of course, the other thing about having long-term clients is being able to put your prices up over time. Like, how have you dealt with that?
You know, I don't put my prices up much, you know, because part of my ethos is that I want to be able to work for people, you know, small businesses doing good things who perhaps normally couldn't afford someone with my level of experience and expertise. So I've kept my prices pretty low for someone who with my experience and background. I'm fortunate because I'm really, really old. So I'm at the point in my career where, you know, I'm not trying to establish myself financially. I can afford to work for probably less money than a young, you know, just starting out, just building, you know, someone copywriter with a mortgage and little kids and all that can do. So, you know, partly it's a consequence of my age and where I'm at financially at this point in my life. So I don't put my prices up really very often. I don't think I've raised them for 2 or 3 years now. Because I want to be able to work for people who are doing amazing things but otherwise couldn't. I don't want to price myself out of the market of the people that I want to work for, I suppose. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does. Although maybe also you had prices that you were happy with to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely I did. Yeah. And one of the other consequences, well, probably the last time I did raise my prices was with a hefty nudge in the ribs from Kate when I did the mastermind course, you know. So, yes, I did. I think it's a fair price. And I do quite a lot of pro bono work as well, you know, at least 2 or 3 big projects a year that I don't charge anyone for because they're amazing humans doing fantastic things. So, yeah, and I mean, I probably could be better at the business side of what I do, but I'm just not.
When it comes to pro bono work, though, do you still invoice them with it zeroed off? Do they understand the what you're giving them financially, value-wise, in case they recommend you to somebody else?
That's actually a really interesting idea, and I'm going to implement that now, because no, I never do that. You know, I just say, you know, your job is free because you're amazing. And, you know, I do two or three of these a year, and yours is one of them. No, I don't. But that's actually a really interesting idea, and thank you for that. I shall implement it.
So what on earth led you to leaving Australia? Was it the fact that you suddenly realised you didn't need to be going into a certain place, that you were properly free?
Well, you know, I'm a New Zealander by birth, and, like, you know, lots and lots of, well, still, in fact, it happens, but lots of New Zealanders of my generation moved to Australia. I moved to Australia in my late 20s. I had 30-odd very good years in Australia, but I've always been Francophile since I learnt my first word of French as a little 11-year-old at school, high school in New Zealand. Something just clicked in my head. I thought, I love this place. And so, you know, I've always come and gone from France, and then we bought a house here. My husband's English. He grew up in the south of England, so Brittany, where we live, is not unlike Cornwall and Devon. You know, he feels pretty at home here. We eventually bought a house here in 2017, and then in 2017 we said, we'll come for a year from Western Australia and see how we like it. And after 3 months, I knew I was never going back.
You mentioned getting some French clients. Are they, like, local to you? Or is
yeah,
it just...
well, mainly local, not entirely local. Some of them are local. I did a website with a woman. She's actually Irish, in fact, married to a Frenchman, who just started an association to do biodiversity projects, you know, really great things for the environment. And so she needed a site in French, so I managed that for her. My neighbours need, you know, my French teacher needed a website for her French classes, so I helped her with that. You know, I do translation of case studies for an Italian-born French-speaking copywriter who's a friend based in Paris, and then through her I've got other translation jobs, one for an enormous French telecom. So, you know, again, word of mouth stuff, really. Yeah.
But is there anyone doing or, like, working the way you live or living the way you work, whichever way around that is, where you are?
Not enormous amounts, but more and more, I think. It's becoming, you know, France is really interesting. It's so advanced in so many ways, but in other ways, the structure of work here is quite calcified, you know. My beautiful neighbour, for example, wanted to morph from being a travel agent to doing some sort of marketing work. You know, she was in her 40s. And she, with enormous courage and tenacity, she pulled that off. But she said, it's so hard here in France. You know, it's hard to change what you do. It's hard to work outside the system. It's hard to get people to accept you on the quality of your work if you don't have a diploma in that thing. You know, so I think, yeah, I think it's happening. Generational change will make it happen more in France, but it's much harder, you know, to start off freelancing here, I think, than it is, you know, in Australia. For me, I just had to show what I could do. You know, I don't have any qualifications in journalism or marketing or, you know, any of the things that you would normally expect from copywriting. My degree's in history and political science, you know, education.
Yeah, but you have a ton of experience.
Yeah, that's it.
What have you found most challenging about being freelance?
Oh, work-life balance was really challenging and still is a bit. That was the motivation between me trying to morph from doing enormous, big, absorbing website copy projects to doing editing. You know, short, quick, easy to do, you know, give me more time to throw my wetsuited body in the Atlantic and have long lunches and all that stuff. But yeah, I do struggle with that, I have to say, you know, not to work, you know, 7 days out of seven. Yeah, where to draw the line, how to make time for myself. I'm getting better at it. You know, I'm nearly 70. It's time to get better at it. But yeah, that for me has been, has probably been the biggest challenge, I think. Yeah.
That surprises me, especially because, you know, in my head, I'm painting a version of what I would be doing if I was living in Brittany in France, and I'd be sitting at this little cafe with my little coffee and my pan au chocolat, waving at people going past on bicycles. But what does then your day or your week look like?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you should say that, because I quarantine Mondays. I don't work. Monday is market day here. So Mondays I don't work. You know, Mondays I have a run, I do my shopping, I hang out with my neighbours and have a coffee. Just exactly like what you described, really.
Heaven.
You know, so Mondays, no, I don't work. And quite often Fridays now. But this is very recent. This is only in the last few months for me that I've instituted these kind of things. So, you know, to keep myself kind of in good mental shape for writing, I do quite a lot of sport. You know, I've run long distance for 40 years. I still run. I live in a 15-minute town. You can go everywhere in 15 minutes on foot. So I walk to the pool and swim, you know, most days. So between getting up very early and doing sport and managing the normal things you do in your household, I probably only write 4 or 5 or maybe 6 hours a day, you know. That's probably as much writing time as I can, as I fit in around other things. Yeah. So it's a balance between those things for myself that I do, which are, you know, meditation, sport, those sort of keeping yourself in good, on an even keel things, running the household, running your life in your second language, even though my French is really good now, still takes more time than running your life in your first language, frankly, and in a different culture. Yeah. So, mostly I write in the afternoons, and at night quite often, are my best times for writing. Yeah.
In what way are they your best times for writing?
I think because the morning is taken up with sport and a leisurely breakfast and doing the Wordle and the Quirtle, you know, and those word puzzly things that keep my brain in gear, and, you know, telephoning and making appointments and paying bills et tout ça, shopping, cooking. I've always written well at night. I don't know, it's quiet and there's no one around. And there are no interruptions, I think. So, you know, I quite like working at night. Yeah.
I'll be honest, Mary, it sounds like your work-life balance is better than maybe you think it is.
It's better now. Frankly, it's much better now than it ever used to be, actually. Yeah, you're right. Describing that, I think I'm starting to get a grip on this thing, you know, finally. Take me 10 years, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, because it sounds like you're building your day around when you work best energy-wise, like creatively-wise, but also prioritizing the things that keep you healthy and bring you joy outside of that work. So it's not just about taking days off, but just about actually your day. Sounds very well balanced in itself.
Mm. The rhythm of my day is absolutely, you know, I'm a creature of habit, absolutely. You know, if I don't run in the morning, I'm likely to, you know, the world's a much less safe place. I mean, by 10 a.m., I'm verging on. So, you know, I do have quite a fixed sort of rhythm in my day for sure. Yeah. And then because my clients are in Australia mostly, you know, if I'm talking to them on Zoom, which I do often, that's early morning for me. So, you know, sometimes I'll be talking to people at 5 and 6 in the morning, my time, because that's the right time for them in Melbourne or Sydney. Yeah.
Okay, back with Mary in a moment. Just want to remind you that if you've not joined the Being Freelance community yet, you're missing out. For years, it was on Facebook. We moved off Facebook because more and more people seem to be leaving it. And honestly, it is so much better. It's so much nicer in there without a load of adverts and clickbait tripping you up in the hallway. You can just really make yourself at home, and it's so easy to find different areas of conversation, to ask for advice, to celebrate your wins, to brainstorm, to have a laugh. To not feel alone whilst doing work alone, I think, is a real benefit. And what's really cool is when I hear the difference that it makes to those who join, both from a social perspective, but also from getting work, getting referrals, or collaborating, like working together from within the community. So cool. Really nice to see. You can come find us, beingfreelance.com, click on community. And for that matter, if you're new to freelancing, if you take the course that there is for new freelancers, 6 months of community membership is included free. So you get started being freelance while surrounded by people already doing it, which is a good thing. Go to beingfreelance.com. All the details are there, and I hope to see you in there soon. All right. Let's get back to Mary. Just to go back to the business name thing, because some people think, should I, you know, use my own name? Should I have a business name? You have had... I mean, you're still behind a business name, The Wrinkly Writer, but I'm just wondering what your experience of that has been, whether it made a difference.
Yeah, I think it made a huge difference. I mean, when I announced it, you know, the rebrand was done and everything was ready to go, and I announced it in Kate's copywriting group, everybody went, oh, God, that's so neat, except for one person who said, oh, that is so insulting to older people. You know, how could you possibly do that? You know, it doesn't matter what age you are, which was kind of my point, really. It doesn't matter what age you are. But so I've had one very adverse reaction from somebody who's probably around my age as well, I guess. But, you know, most people go, oh, that's so clever. You know, it's such a great brand, you know. And, of course, it's me. You know, they look at me, you know, my wrinkles. I am the Wrinkly Writer. Et voilà. Voilà. No point, you know, pretending that I'm not a wrinkly old dame, a wrinkly bossy old dame. It's what I am.
You also mentioned being in a mastermind. Like, have you had much experience of that? I guess surrounding yourself with other copywriters or freelancers.
I haven't done a lot of that sort of formal mastermind type training, but I do definitely surround myself with a little coterie of really other absolutely brilliant, talented copywriters that I share work with. And hey, what do you think of this? And what do you think of that? I also, because I think it's a responsibility of that comes with my age. I do mentor and support and nurture and nudge young copywriters, or not necessarily young, but beginning copywriters, because I think that's, you know, part of that sort of crone responsibility of older humans to take, you know, to bring on the people who are coming after you. So I do a fair bit of that mentoring and nudging and reviewing of work for up and coming copywriters. And then I have a select group of, other copywriters around me whom I trust, who I share work with. But, you know, I'm like a lot of people who are freelancers, I'm quite profoundly introverted. So, I'm not a big sort of social person, I suppose, to have a huge group around me, if that makes sense.
So these people you've met online?
Yeah, mostly. Yes, in fact, all of them, yeah. No, I don't think I've met any of them face to face.
I love the phrase nurture and nudge. That's nice. And is that as in a paid mentor or as in?
No. It's just, I started doing it when I had more work than I could handle and I wanted to subcontract, you know, I wanted to subcontract some young copywriters to work for me, but it just didn't work, you know, because I don't know, I couldn't. Despite providing lots of examples and I thought being very clear, I somehow couldn't get the level of work that I needed without a lot of going back in and rewriting and re-editing. So I kind of stopped looking for that sort of formal subcontracting relationship where some portion of that, would be I would pay for some of it, but also I would do some mentoring for it. Now I just do it for free. You know, people can just, you know, there's always two or three people at one time who can send me their stuff. I'll look at it, comment on it. We'll do live edit, which, you know, like my client in Melbourne, they probably need to have a stiff whiskey. We put their work up on the screen in Zoom and, you know, we edit it on the fly with a conversation around it. So, yeah, but I don't charge for it. No, I don't.
So now you don't subcontract anything?
I don't, no. I just, it's too much hard work, you know. It's more work than it's, yeah, really. I just, it's probably a fault on my part. Which is weird because I'm pretty clear at, setting out what I need and what I want. But also I think my clients want to work with me, you know. They want to, they want that sort of bossy, quirk, you know, experience, clear, fewer words, more meaning kind of copy that, you know, that's what I do, yeah.
Yeah. Does that mean that you now might turn work away if at one point you had so much that you wanted to bring on others?
I would probably just refer it on to that coterie of copywriters around me. You know, I'd say, look, I can't do this, but here's somebody who I think would be a good fit for the job. Have a chat with them. Yeah.
So you chose not to niche, or rather you did and found it boring and backed out of it. But I also described you as a freelance editor and SEO copywriter, which is in itself kind of like narrowing down.
Yeah.
what you do. How have you found that experience of focusing on those skills, you know, a niche of itself within the skills of copywriting?
Yeah, I mean, I guess on the aspect of niche, I think I wrote about this recently. I did Nikki Pilkington's 8-week LinkedIn challenge, because I'm really trying to show up on LinkedIn. I'm really not doing a good job of it anymore. But, you know, one of the challenges in that was to talk about your niche. And, you know, I'm a no-niche copywriter, but my clients are really niche. You know, they're all amazing, courageous, curious humans, you know. So I seem to attract a niche of a particular kind of client, you know, which is about as niche as I'm ever going to get, probably. But I've lost the thread of the question. In terms of the editing, I mean, I'll edit anything anyone wants to send me. You know, I edit an amazing range of subject matter, you know, from something for newsletters for dental practices to blogs for, you know, companies that produce amazing fetish equipment and everything in between. It's not just words to me, but, you know, I'll look at words about anything and edit them or turn them into website copy. Yeah. Mm. If that makes sense. I probably haven't answered your question.
Okay, now, Mary, I always do this thing where I ask for three facts about yourself to make two true, one a lie, and let me figure out the lie. What do you have for me?
Okay, all right. First thing, I can curse fluently in 5 languages. First thing. Second thing, I can swim underwater for 50 meters in one breath. Third thing, I'm still an ardent fan of the Hemingway app, the old school Hemingway app for editing. Even though it's fallen out of currency a bit, I still love it.
Now, Hemingway app. I've no idea what you're talking about, which makes me wonder whether that's true. Because maybe that's like, I don't know, maybe there's copywriters here. So Hemingway app.
Yeah, it's not as popular as it used to be because it's very minimalist. So it's an app. You put your piece of writing in and it scores you, you know, and in terms of the Hemingway style of writing, you know, kill adjectives, kill long sentences, kill complicated, wanky, jargon-ridden, yeah, that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. All right.
It exists. Honest, it's a thing.
I mean, in a funny kind of way. Though, if I'm saying that's true, that's a shame because I really want the other two to be true. So you can curse fluently in 5 languages. What are the 5 languages, Mary?
Well, French, évidemment. Yep. Okay. English. Yep. Italian. Turkish. And Vietnamese. And the reason for that is that when I lived in Sydney, I taught migrant and refugee teenagers for a while. And the first thing that those kids teach each other is how to curse in their language. And I remember looking in the exercise book of this very demure, beautiful little Korean young girl. And in the back, in very beautiful cursive writing, she had the most horrific swear words in all the in every language that was represented in the class.
Okay. I mean, that has to be true. Unless, of course, it has an element of truth, but you never learnt the words because clearly you're just too lovely and would never need to curse. Okay, number 2, you can swim for 50 metres underwater in one breath.
That's it.
50 metres. How long? That would be like 2 lengths of a swimming pool,
that's
wouldn't it?
That's it. Exactly that.
No. Come on. That is a long way. Could that be true?
I'm a runner. I have really good lungs.
But when you run, you breathe. You don't run 100 metres holding your breath. 50 metres, like that's like a free diver or something. That's, except worse than that, because you're moving, you're swimming. It's like that scene in the Mission Impossible film where Tom Cruise is in an underwater vault trying to, I mean, no spoiler alert or anything, but... Were you his stunt? He doesn't need a stunt double. No. You would have been a shoo-in otherwise. Is that true? Surely. Ah! You said you swim every day, though. I don't know. That seems like a very long way. Oh, man. Okay, part of me wants to say the Hemingway app isn't true because I want the other two to be true. But I also can't get away from the fact that 50 meters feels like it's pushing it. I think that's the lie.
No, that's true. I do. I'm training to do, I'm coming to your patch actually to a dive center to do free diving training. And part of my preparation is that I need to be able to swim 50 meters. I can do 50 meters. Underwater. Yeah. The lie is that you nearly nailed it. Actually, I used to be able to swim fluently in five languages. Now I can only do it in French and English.
Ah, okay. Wow. You can hold your breath, but more than that, you're coming to Britain to do free diving training.
Yeah.
Like, how far will you be going down?
Well, I want to get certified at an intermediate level, which means that I need to be able to do 25 to 30 meters. So 50 meters, you know, that you still want to come up. You can go down 25, you still want to come up. And then there's a static training, you know, hold your breath and not move. I can do 4 minutes 23 seconds at last count for that. So, yeah.
Holy heck, Mary. You can go underwater and hold your breath for 4 minutes.
Yeah. And 23 seconds. Don't forget.
Okay. 1 second. How long does Tom Cruise hold his breath? Oh, here we are. It comes up. I'm not the only person to ask such a question. He held his breath for 6.5 minutes.
Yeah. My goal is 6 minutes. I'm working towards that.
You really could be in a Mission Impossible film. We need to make this happen. You're way more impressive than anything in those films. Mary, wow.
I'll add it to my list of things to do.
That is so cool. Wow. Okay. Now, if you could tell your younger self one thing about being freelance, what would that be?
Well, I would tell my younger self, who was pretty much a kind of language-loving fish out of water always, hang in there, kid. Because you're going to find your pond, your freelance pond. You're going to do amazing, great work that you love. You're going to be your own boss, which is going to suit you right down to the ground. It's going to take a little while and it'll be on the other side of the world, but you will get there.
I love it. Okay, Mary, it's been so good to talk to you. Go to beingfreelance.com. There are clicks through so that you can find Mary online. Actually, I didn't really ask you about that. Like, you mentioned LinkedIn, but do you do like it's social media in general, or?
I'm not very good at it, I have to say.
That's okay.
You know, and I have to say, you know, I mentioned again on LinkedIn, I owe a debt to the wonderful Frankie, who was on your podcast, who sort of gave me permission. Frankie, I've forgotten her other name.
Shanahan,
yeah, that's it. Who gave me permission not to have to give tips and tricks on Instagram or LinkedIn, yes. You know, and that I'm forever grateful for that podcast. Thank you so much. So, yeah, I do not a very consistent job on social media. I am on social media and I'm trying to be better at it, but it's not my forte.
Okay, so if you want to find Mary on social media, it sounds like LinkedIn is the
LinkedIn
place to
is the place, yeah.
And you guys can all hide out together. But also check out the Wrinkly Writer website. We'll put a link at beingfreelance.com. And Mary has mentioned Kate Toon. I will put a link to Kate's episode of Being Freelance from many, many years ago. But also she did a Q&A in the community, which is well worth a listen as well. So you can hear that as a podcast, I think, as well as watching the full one in the community. So I'll dig out the links. I'll put them in. It'll all be at beamfreelance.com. But Mary, it's been so good to talk to you. Good luck. Well, good luck with the business. The work-life balance, I'm not worried about you with that at all. But for goodness sake, the free diving has got put me on edge. You're amazing. Thank you so much. All the best being freelance.
Thanks, Steve. Bonjour.
I hope you enjoyed that. How wonderful is Mary? Mary's story joining over 300 other stories and experiences of freelancers from around the world. Go dig back through the back catalogue. It doesn't matter what people do for a living. It's all about being freelance. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please do think about sharing it and maybe reviewing it. If you've not left one, I'm very bad at asking for reviews, but apparently it makes a difference. So here I am asking. Always tag me in at Being Freelance on Instagram if you're sharing, I don't know, a screen grab of you listening. All right, I'm out of here. New episodes coming every other week at the moment, so I'll see you in a couple of weeks. But in the community sooner if you're already there, and you have a great week. Being Freelance.